Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode. Today's guest is Patty Black. Patty is the host of Witch and Goddess podcast. She's a professional witch and a witchcraft educator. She is a priestess of Morgan Le Fay, and she has an award-winning background in adult education. She uses transformative tools and mystical arts to guide other humans to self-empowerment through witchcraft and through magic. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so excited to get into this topic. So I wanted to get started with understanding your background and how you knew that being a witch and witchcraft was going to be your path.
Well, I was raised in a very, very conservative and kind of strict religious Protestant household. And I... While I was, you know, always bristling, I think, against the limitations of that upbringing, and had some religious trauma associated with that, I was also in awe of my mother's experience with religion and Christianity and spirituality. She was strict and conservative, but she also was very aligned and spiritually connected. She spoke in tongues spontaneously. She would wake up early, several days a week before sending us to school and going to her job, to have hours long ecstatic prayer sessions with her prayer partners. Wow. And so as much as I don't agree with the limitations and politics of her faith, I was always inspired by her strength and her connection within it. She showed me at a really early age that spirituality was much deeper than showing up at church every Sunday. But she also at the same time unintentionally sparked a fire of feminism in me. You know, she told me one time that as a girl, what she really wanted to do when she grew up was to be a preacher or minister within the Christian church. And I think she would have been good at it. She was a wonderful student. She led children's ministry. She spoke publicly. She was really fired up. But somebody, I'm not sure, who told her that, you know, she couldn't do that as a woman, that her way to serve Christ would be as a Sunday school teacher or a church secretary, you know, and of course, to have children and raise them as good Christians. And she accepted that, but I really picked up on the regret in her face and her voice when she told me that. And I got fired up and angry for her on her behalf. And so that really sparked feminism for me. And the sexism in God's name just became an increasing problem for me throughout my childhood.
Definitely. So seeing that with your, you know, mom, I can just imagine how angry that would, you know, you would be just witnessing that.
Yeah, that spark really dimmed in her. Yeah, that really became a problem for me. And so in high school and college, I really just increasingly fought back against Christianity and just fought for my ability and freedom to not be forced to go to church and participate in that. I wanted nothing to do with that. But in college, I really started longing for spirituality, and I didn't understand at the time, but for mysticism. I thought I was looking for a replacement religion. And so that's how I eventually discovered Wicca, and witchcraft is kind of as my witch identity. And it really just seemed perfect for me. It really fed the part of me that had always seen and felt magic in the world. Eventually, I veered away from Wicca and really just went into witchcraft more as a general practice and not a religion, which works better for me. Personally, I just found the structure of Wicca and the ways that they relate to gods just too similar for me to Christianity. That structure, I think, was limiting for me. And I didn't want to replace one dogmatic religion with another. Not that Wicca is in any way like Christianity, but they felt similar to me.
What's the difference between witchcraft and Wicca?
So Wicca is a very specific, well, I say it's a very specific religion with systems and structures and a lot of traditional practices. There are, just like with Christianity, lots of branches of Wicca that have slightly different flavors and traditions. And Wicca believes in the threefold law, that whatever you do, magically or otherwise, comes back to you times three. And it also believes in the Wiccan reed, which is a wonderful theory. The beginning of and kind of essence that everyone takes away from it is, and harm none, do what you will. Which, if you've been raised in Christianity, is very liberating. So witchcraft is a practice. So it is the practice of doing things that makes one a witch. And so there are a lot of Wiccans who consider themselves witches, most of them, I think. And but not every witch is a Wiccan. And increasingly, we have more and more people who are exploring witchcraft outside of the structure of Wicca. So
how did your mother or your family respond to your, you know, really your deviation into witchcraft?
And not well.
Not well.
as a young kid, I used to ask questions. I would ask deep questions about the religion and get some great answers, but I also would ask questions about things that I felt were mysterious, and even things that seem as benign to me as asking my mom about the Bermuda Triangle, which the mystery of those things just really fascinated me, and ghosts and things like that. And she regarded those questions with a lot of suspicion and wariness. And so I feel like maybe she was sensing me going into this world. But yeah, not long after I started practicing Wicca, I told my mom about it, because in my heart, I was like, this is so innocent and pure. I don't know how anybody could think this was evil. I just wanted to share with her that this is not what you think it is.
Yeah.
That conversation did not go as well as I thought. I was quoted, you know, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, you know, which I've heard many times over the years. So it was a chasm that we've never been able to bridge, unfortunately. So
you've been practicing as a witch for quite some time.
Yes. 25 years now. So
that is a long time. And what has that experience been like for you? Because you also teach and practice magic.
Yeah. It's been a winding road. Like I said, I started with Wicca, and really had a very, as fascinated as I was with everything. At the time, I had, as you will, a really two-dimensional understanding of what I was getting into. And, you know, there have even been times over that period when I was married to my first husband, and I wasn't as inspired with my craft at that time, and I was in this toxic marriage. And I really just told myself, I'm not a witch anymore. This isn't working for me. I don't need this. And really just put it to the side for that 3 to 4 years that I was married to him, and then had a young child and going through a divorce and single motherhood, and set it aside. And when life settled down again and I had more room, it just came roaring back. I really thought I was finished with it for a while, strangely. And that, of course, is when everything picked up and really started coming to life.
So when you say things picked up and came to life, what do you mean? Can you give some examples?
That is when I started I had always been a solitary practitioner, so just working on my own, not in a coven. And I still am for the most part, although I have lots of groups and things online. But I started receiving just out of the blue invitations from people to start working with them. There was a woman I had met by happenstance who wanted to start a coven, and she just reached out to me intuitively and said, I think that you might be interested in this, but I don't know if you are. And that didn't last, but it really helped me make a lot of connections and woke me up to the fact that this is still alive in me and this is something that I need and I'm passionate about. And it wasn't long after that that the goddess connection really came in. I had, for most of my practice before that, been very fascinated by the idea of goddesses, and it really lit me up to see that representation. But I didn't even know if I believed in God at the time. I mean, I really didn't after Christianity. And so I viewed goddess figures and deities as these kind of archetypes that we could learn wonderful lessons and stories from and who were greatly inspirational. But I didn't think that they were interactive spirits that I could or would ever actually interact with. And, you know, I was proven wrong and started experiencing spirit in a lot of different ways at about the same time. It was about a year and a half before I left my traditional career. The spirit started coming in and shaking shit up, really. So
what was that like? And like you said, you've had, you know, interactions with, let's say, goddesses. What was that introduction like for you? Did you have any preconceived notions let me actually step back. Did they contact you first or did you make the connection first?
I think that if I could be really, you know, like, trite about it, I think they were waiting for me to get to a point where I was ready for it. I didn't specifically or actively contact them that I remember, but I did pick up a book from Doreen Virtue, who doesn't, as far as I know, write in New Age or anything anymore. But it was a book about archangels and ascended masters. And I don't really remember why I grabbed that book. But at the beginning, she said, this book is an activation of, she said something like, this book is an activation, and just reading this book will open doors for spirit to contact you. And I was like, ooh. But I mean, no lie, that's when things really started picking up. I don't think it was because of that necessarily, but I do think that we do certain things in our mundane lives to spirit that demonstrate to them a readiness or a willingness to interact. And so there were a few smaller things that I dismissed, but what really caught my attention was there was an evening when I was in bed going through a hard time in my marriage, and I went to bed distraught, crying, like guttering cries, just in deep despair, just really upset and so deeply hurt. And I had read about Kuan Yin in this book by Doreen Virtue, the goddess of compassion who answers every call. And so in my mind, just silently, I was like, I called out to her and asked her for comfort, and immediately just felt the most, you know, almost physical balm, like a blanket of comfort and peace just fall over me. The softest and most comforting feeling I've ever experienced. And it was so sudden and so dramatic, there was absolutely no denying that I had been instantly answered. And so that kind of interaction and that demonstration of what was possible, even though now it seems like a very simple interaction, it was mind-blowing. And there's a definite before and after. Because before I was still very much, these are just archetypes, they're not real. And after I was like, oh, they're so real. Now I know that spirit is really there and that they can interact. It was amazing. So
after that initial interaction with Kuan Yin, did you set out to try to interact with a variety of other goddesses to see what that experience would be like? Or what did you do next, I guess?
I think it happened kind of naturally. I was still looking at the Ascended Masters and kind of fascinated with them because I'd never heard about them. And I've moved on from that phase now, but I was looking at that and spending a lot of time at a local more New Age store because I had made some friends there, and somehow happened on to an article by Demelza Fox about Morgan Le Fay, and she eventually became my priestess mentor, and trained me in that first year of priestess training with Maureen LeFay. But it was, I rediscovered Morgan Le Fay. I, of course, was aware of her as a literary figure and read The Mists of Avalon in high school. It was like my Bible that I carried around all of the time, and was fascinated with her as a figure, as a literary figure, but never recognized her as a goddess figure. And so that article, and then getting into some programs and courses with her, helped me to see her as a goddess figure and to start working with her and interacting with her, which was obviously something that worked out really well for me.
Yeah. So as a priestess of Maureen Le Fay, what is that experience and relationship like?
It's really interesting. You know, every goddess is so individual and unique. With Maureen Le Fay, she's very much a subtle guide. She doesn't come out and present herself as boldly as some of the other goddesses I've worked with, but she is always showing me little affirmations of her presence around me in day-to-day life. And she is a guide who manipulates and works and influences things to either bring about or highlight for me paths in education and studying that she wants me to take. I only started working with Hecate because Maureen Le Fay pushed me in that direction. And so, because I had had some calls from Hecate and been like, no, I don't think that's my thing. She kind of intimidates me. And so Morgana had other plans and encouraged me to do that. What I find fascinating about her is the magic and her defiance and her disobedience. She really shakes up patriarchal paradigms, and that is obviously something I'm passionate about. But she's different. It's different with everybody, I think, in their devotional relationship and how the goddesses show up for them. For me, she is just constantly moving me down these certain paths to different things. And she teases me with very wonderful interactive experiences once in a while, but I don't get those super magical experiences with her all of the time or as regularly as I do with some other goddesses. She's elusive and mysterious. So
I'm sure you've noticed over the past, I'm just going to say like 20, at least 20, probably more years, that if you go into a library and you go to the New Age section or spirituality, whatever, there are so many books. So it was like there's an explosion of goddess books everywhere, right? Like goddess spirituality, it almost seems like it came out of the woodwork, so to speak. So what's your kind of thoughts about this in general? Because it is, at least I think, you know, kind of becoming a little mainstream, but or people are becoming more familiar with the goddesses, with their energy. And I feel like they're more prevalent now than obviously, you know, they've been for a very long time. So why do you think that's kind of emerging in this time period?
I think there are a lot of reasons. I think that collectively, women and everyone are waking up to the fact that the patriarchy has had a boot on our neck for so long. Some people have been in denial of that. Some people still say that's not an issue. And I think people are waking up to their own trauma, and goddesses provide, first, like I was so drawn to, representation. For those of us who grew up in these, you know, patriarchal religions, seeing a female figure represented as divine and not dirty and the creator of sin, like Eve,
yeah,
did so much for my self-esteem and my level of confidence, just knowing that there were goddesses. And I think that calls to a lot of us who have had similar and parallel experiences. I also think that more mystically, we're moving into a time when there's a lot of transition and transformation in the world. We feel it politically and socially. And I think this is the answer to that. I don't think witchcraft and goddess work are the answer to everything. I don't think it alone is going to change the world, but I think it's a key part. I think marginalized people who have been held down for so long have to wake up to our own power in order to help change things and help each other out of these positions. And spirituality, witchcraft, goddess devotion, these are all really excellent ways to help people wake up to their own sovereignty and power.
So. Yeah, I totally agree too. I kind of, you know, personally, I think as a collective, yes, we see like what's happening. I mean, I can just speak to the United States, but even globally as well, there's some, you know, there's something in the air, or there's an energy change that's kind of, you know, happening here on Earth. And I think that people, I hope, are waking up and doing a lot of internal and even external questioning in terms of what the status quo has been, what we've always accepted to be true. And I think that even doing that questioning kind of invites other types of spiritual practices, I don't know, spirits to enter, to, you know, say, you know, hello, there is a new way, there's something else, there's another way to understand, learn, and approach life, you know, and I'm hoping that that's kind of what the shift is, but I guess we'll see in time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
I wanted to ask you some questions about magic, because I think that obviously there's this nasty stigma associated with magic. So I wanted to know how you define magic and how you practice.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of definitions out there, but I define or experience magic as this intentional use of a personal wealth and the world around you, your life. And obviously, I think it's a very individual and independent practice, and the practitioner is going to determine the flavor of that magic and what it's used for. I think that magic is neutral, and I think the use of magic and the art of magic to positively transform our lives, I think it's our birthright. I think that we all have the ability, not just witches and people who identify that way, although that's close at heart for me.
Yeah.
So I practice, for me, you know, my witchcraft uses plant spirits, speaking to and petitioning goddesses of witchcraft, lots of candles, you know, especially crafting powders and oils, creating sigils, doing all of this on, you know, planetary days and during specific planetary hours involving the moon phases. But, you know, my witchcraft also involves working specific intentions and trance when I create my art, so that then those finished pieces are spells in themselves. So less traditional means as well. The methods of witchcraft are always growing and evolving, and people's practices can go as far as their imagination and dreams can take them, which is a beautiful thing about it, I think.
So let's say that someone comes to you and they're interested in practicing magic and learning about it. Where do you think they should start?
I would ask them, you know, if they're more interested in the practice or in self, you know, transformation, what's their motivation for that? And that would help me, because it is a wide, wide world. And so when I mentor people as well, it is, you know, is this a religion for you, or is this a practice that helps you enhance your life in a more, I don't want to say mundane, but in a more, you know, non-spiritual way? Is this more of a science and a practice for you? And that will lead me towards how to approach that. If somebody is already experiencing spirit and connection, then I think witchcraft becomes a different animal. Both ways are effective, both ways are valid, and I love both ways, but they are different. So reading, of course, finding books that inspire you and stimulate you, but also cover the basics, you know, finding courses, finding mentors and teachers who you align with, because as we know, witchcraft is as varied as the plants that are out there and the spirits that are out there, and everybody's approach to it is a little bit different. And I believe they're all legitimate and all valid.
Yeah. So what do you think what would you say are some of the most important ingredients in magic in general?
Like physical ingredients for spells?
No,
or
not necessarily
aspects.
Like aspects, yeah, not necessarily physical.
First, and this is a lifelong journey, but I think it's critical that you have an understanding that you have a right to change your world and a right to use your will to influence change. And that sounds really basic and simple, but the more I teach and the more I mentor people, the more I realize that there is a basic level. And I attribute a lot of it to religious trauma. And most of us feel that we don't have the right to ask God for things, that we don't have the right to change things, that because we've been taught, a lot of us, about God's will determining everything, predestined plans, that we can only pray for other people, or that we can, because people tend to view their spell work very similar to the way they viewed prayer as a, when they were raised in patriarchal religions, if they were. And basically they don't feel sovereign. They don't feel they have a right to influence the world. They feel, you know, I'll say, let's do a spell about this. I don't want to cheat, or I don't want to, is that wrong? Is it, you know, is it unethical? Only if you think that it's unethical for you to have your hands in the way things go. And we influence the will of the world every day when we step out of our door. We influence the world when we apply for a job, when we make the decision to say a specific thing to a coworker or a friend, when we take a certain turn or a different route on our way to work, we influence the way of the world in those ways. And so I think that we have to come to the understanding that we have the right to influence it with our will and with our energy as well, in a more intentional way. A lot of us are influencing the world accidentally or unintentionally.
That's a very good way to put it. I don't think anybody probably thinks about that when, you know, they get up in the morning and they're getting ready for work and they're going about their lives. But yes, like everything that we're doing, there's going to be, like, you know, an effect to that. Like, we're always in the you know, there's always cause and effect, you know, to everything that we're doing. But being more mindful and intentional about that, I think, is very powerful.
Yeah. And so I guess back to your question about the magic and the important aspect, when we lack that feeling of it's my right to influence things, it's my right to be involved in this world that I live in, then people tend to come to spell work in an almost apologetic and begging way, which I have been guilty of myself. I've seen this. Oh, goddess, if it's your will, please let me have this, instead of in a bold way saying, this is what I want, and this is what I'm going to work my will towards, and I'll take all the support I can get in that, but I'm not going to apologize for what I want. What I found over and over again with deities and goddesses outside of Christianity is they don't want, I can't speak for all of them, but the ones I've encountered and the ones I like, don't want me on my knees. They want me to stand up and meet them eye to eye. That's a very big lesson with Ekate that she's been teaching me over and over again. Don't come to me on your knees groveling. Come to me as the empowered witch that I am, and meet me as equals, literally meet me as equals. And not all deities might respond to that, but that has been a life-changing lesson for me, both in how I approach my magic and the world in general.
And I think it is a super self-empowering way as well, because as you said, you know, in Christianity, when you go to church, you are taught from such a young age, you know, depending on how often you've gone to church, but you're taught to be in the kneeling position, in a submissive position, as opposed to be standing, you know, upright and kind of owning your natural power. So I think it is it's a very different take, yes, in your practice, but a very different take on just being a human and living in this world and, you know, going through life.
Yeah, it is a very layered lesson that I will probably continue to learn through the rest of this lifetime and never, ever master it, because there's just so many layers of programming to undo. So.
And that's definitely a good way of putting it too, like the programming, because if you've been raised in the church, you know, for so long, then that's going to be your natural response to many things. you know, your initial thought isn't necessarily going to be, you know, standing tall and feeling confident in your words and your beliefs and going after what you want. You know, there's more questioning and, you know, am I good enough? And I feel like, and as you were saying, even with witchcraft, it feels very much more, there's a lot more sovereignty and ownership over your life.
Yes. Which is why I think, you know, it's really important that there's a lot of discussion and discourse over what types of spells are ethical and what are not. And I really feel strongly that we have to leave that sovereignty and that decision up to the practitioner. Are we always going to make the right decisions? No. But if we truly, truly believe that people have free will and that we have the right to define our own spirituality and define our own lives and make choices about our lives and our bodies, then we also have the right to go to our altar and do what we decide to do. And so what somebody else does at their altar is not my business. You know, I like to share what I do and how I feel about ethics. And I'm happy to discuss the ins and outs of ethics and how I make my ethical decisions. But I think it's important not to try to judge what other people are doing at their altar.
And I think, you know, it's funny that you say that, because in society at large, when people hear the word witch, you know, there's an assumption that, oh, there's dark magic and, you know, they're going to put a hex on me or curse or whatever. I think, you know, just because of the way history has framed witches and defined them through time, that's our natural, that's what we think. That's how we naturally define it. But how do you deal with the stigma attached to that?
You know, you bring up a good point. The word witch is, it's a slur. It's an accusation, and one that could throughout history and still in some countries to this very day,
yes,
end in a death sentence. And so we're very privileged. I feel very privileged to be able to bandy this word around so casually. It wasn't casual for me when I first started practicing. One of the reasons I liked Wicca was because I knew it meant witch, but I didn't have to say witch to people. And it was a long process getting comfortable with that word because the stigma is so strong. I live in the Midwest and always have. And so, you know, right in the heart of the Bible Belt, that is even more so. But it, you know, even in the most progressive places, you're going to at least get side eye if you say that out loud. And it is a misunderstood art form. It's a misunderstood practice, I should say. But the longer I practice, the more I find a certain, maybe people think it's perverse, I find a certain power in the fact, in reclaiming the word witch. Because people have leveled the word witch with so much hate and fear and intimidation over the years, because let's face it, it's based in fear of these figures being empowered in ways that they didn't understand. I really believe words are spells, and that word carries thousands of years worth of really loaded energy. And I love the idea of taking that word and changing it and switching it to a powerful title for myself, but also a reclaiming of all of that energy. And now I can transmute that energy that's loaded this word for so long and use it to fuel my life and my art and my practice in interesting and hopefully unexpected ways.
So have you found, given that you live in the Midwest, do you find that a lot of your clientele are from the Midwest or from more progressive areas?
You know, I do some in-person classes and workshops here in town. And so I know a lot of local witches, and I have a lot of local witches and people who are, you know, witch curious, who come into my classes. But most of my followers and audience are digital online followers from all over the country, most US and Canada, you know, the UK, and, you know, the podcast has been listened to in like 200 countries or something. It's crazy to me. But mostly American witches, I think.
Well, I think it's an exciting time. I mean, I can't speak to the past, but I think it's an exciting time you know, just because I really do believe that people are waking up and they're, you know, finding their own practice and they're exploring and their minds are open to something else as opposed to what we've, you know, been told for a long period of time was the only way. And I just, there's just an excitement around that, at least for me, that aspect of what's happening in the world. Like you said, many people from all types of countries are listening to your show. So people are starting to question at the very least, you know, because Christianity has such a strong hold, you know, globally. And, you know, which is also another conversation for another freaking day. I could talk about that for centuries, but it's exciting to see that people are really starting to question, you know, was everything that I've been told since a kid reality, or is there something else going on behind the curtain, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of potential in just people pausing enough to question what they've been spoon-fed.
Exactly. And definitely, I will say, and I can only speak from personal experience, is like when you start to question and you go to those who, you know, your family or your people you're close with, and you tell them, or you have, you know, questions about Christianity or your upbringing or, you know, what you've always been taught, there's a lot of resistance and there's a lot of anger when you start to question. That's, I feel like that's a very common thing. Has that been your experience? Like just
very much. You know, the conversation about my spirituality has been one that I tried to have at first, and then we said, let's just agree to disagree. And with the political changing and things getting a lot more heated socially, these conversations came up more with my family, and it came to a point where, you know, my dad said some ugly things, and said that my religion and way of life was tearing the family apart. You know, I think it really threatened them. And partially for political and religious reasons, but mostly for other reasons that have due to, you know, past trauma and abusers being accepted in the family. All those factors came together. And so now I am, you know, not, I've gone no contact with my family. Which I think I know a lot of people who've done that in the past few years. And it's been very healing for me to have that distance and to enforce those boundaries, because the comments and the language and the arguments that I wasn't instigating about my lifestyle and my spirituality basically became increasingly abusive and were crossing boundaries in a lot of different ways. So
it's always interesting for me. I mean, I know this is common, but it's very interesting for me just to talk to people about whose families turn them away because they have a completely different religious or spiritual belief system. It's very, I don't know, it's very eye-opening to me because there is so much fear and there's so much, you know, just hostility. If you decide to believe something else that is not the status quo, that is not the dominant overarching like teaching. And I don't know, it shocks me to my core at times because there is so much anger and people are willing to just toss you to the side or have no more contact, or they don't want to engage. You know, it's a that just has to be very challenging within your family.
Yeah, I think that, and you hit the nail on the head when you said they're threatened. I think that's what you said, because I think it's, you pull back that veil and you see what's beyond through that questioning. And if they're in such close proximity to somebody, that threatens their ability to keep it closed and to not question anything. You know, if you're doing this and you're connected to me, it might be catching, it might be contagious, you know, and I don't need my worldview shaken up is kind of the vibe I get from them. So.
And yes, I like that you said their worldview, because that's what it is. You know, it's something that they've chosen to believe, and that is, you know, and that's what they take as truth for them. Mm-hmm. And it's like you know, studying something else, practicing something else is almost like you're challenging their truth. In a way.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I would agree, unfortunately.
Yeah,
So.
I think that's common really for a lot of people. It's like you're the one who is on the periphery because you won't buy into what the system has told you is real. This is how it is, this is how it's always been, this is how it's always going to be. And if you question, then you're the one who's going to be persecuted. That's very crazy.
And if you question it, then this ideal world that we've built up in our heads, where we are never wrong and we're always the heroes, always coming in to save other people, if we question one little bit of that, then that pulls the thread on the whole system and it can all come down. Then I have to question everything about what I believed. So.
Yes, and who wants to do that?
Exactly.
It's
Me
so much
every
work.
day.
Seriously. Well, Patty, I'm so glad that you joined me today. This is a very great, chat with you, and it was very informative and enlightening for me as well. And I want you to tell people how they can find you and connect with you and the courses that you offer.
Well, you can listen to my podcast, Witch and Goddess. It's available on Spotify and pretty much anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can find me, my courses and programs on blackbirdmagic.com, and that is magic spelled with a CK. And so I am on Instagram at Witch and Goddess Pod, where I post updates on new episodes and things like that. And I have a private Facebook group for witches called Arcana. And you can find links for that on my website as well. You can join that and hear about my offerings and get my takes on witchcraft and some fun witchy content as well. So.
Awesome, Patty. Thank you so much. And I will tell everybody to please definitely listen to your podcast. I love your podcast. I listen. I know, when you upload your episodes. It's very enjoyable, but I feel like it's extremely thoughtful, and definitely I know you take your time to put it together, and it's well worth the wait. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me. It's been lovely to talk to you.
You as well, Patty. Take care.
All right, you too.
Okay,
Bye.
bye-bye.